drafts of kidnapping, we were more in line with the model penal code, and the commission didn't feel that it was broad enough. We didn't want to limit it to committed persons.
Well, we had to, right.
And so this has evolved through the drafting to not just include committed persons, but to include other incompetents.
Well, originally, we had one subsection, and it related to people under 16 and incompetence and committed people. And we had some trouble at the last commission meeting about the definition of incompetent and committed people. And so what you did is you just pared down sub 1, making it relate exclusively to people not reaching 16. And then you broadened sub 2 and didn't make any reference whatsoever to committed or incompetent people. I think a...
You got a reference by saying no legal right to do so, don't you?
Well, we also use the term lawful custodian, which we've defined in section 1.
Now really, the distinction that we're getting to in all of section 4 is that we don't have in section 2 or section 3 in first degree or second is that the taking or enticing or whatever can be done with the consent of the victim. In other words, we're making the victim the parent or the person with the having lawful custody under custodial interference. So that one thing that bothers me is where under the majority-minority thing does a person like even a 20-year-old boy, his parent is still his lawful custodian, isn't he?
This bothers me more than anything else, this overriding age thing.
So that where, say, a 22-year-old boy and a 22-year-old boy say, well, let's take off to California and get a job. And the parent, the kid may go and say, well, can I go to California with Joe? And the father say no, and they go ahead and take off. Then could his buddy Joe be charged with custodial interference when it's a 20-year-old boy?
Let me try this one on you. Suppose the kid's 60. Let's put him 60. I'm divorced. The mother is just a bitch, but she's got custody of the children. And I go up to the kid and I say, "Come on, go fishing with me this weekend." "Great, Dad. Love to go." She goes romping down to the woods.
I think the essential problem is we're trying to deal with sort of a leftover area. I don't think anybody has asked, really, what are we trying to forbid, if anything? In other words, what problem are we dealing with? Are we dealing with the enticement of a child, such as in a former, and what's spell that?
As this has evolved from the earlier drafts, we were dealing with incompetence and with committed people. But this is substantially broader, and I see in Lee's situation where you'd be subjected to prosecution under subsection 2 of section 4.
You're the father, you'd be number one.
No, but the kid has 16.
Right.
However, you would not be subjected to prosecution under kidnapping in the second degree because you're a relative. So, but you would be under sub 2 here. And I can see a court looking at this statute on its face without the benefit of the earlier drafts and legislative history that we've gone through saying, hell yes, you're within the purview of this statute. And I'm not sure that's exactly what the intent of either the subcommittee or the commission has been up to this date.
Well, I go back to my original statement. I think that sub 2 of section 4 is almost exactly the same as section 2, kidnapping in the second degree.
Except there's a defense in...
There's a defense only for the child relative.
Yeah, there is a defense in section to kidnapping in the second degree, but there's no defense to custodial interference in the second degree section 2.
But custodial interference, we missed a misdemeanor in kidnapping.
Yeah.
That's what we were trying to get at, but...
Would you want to make a separate Section 6, which would embody the defense that's in Section 2, and have it apply to kidnapping in the second degree and custodial interference in the second degree?
That do what?
Take the defense that's in Sub 2 of Section 2 and have it apply also to Sub 2 of Section 4. Now that's what...
Really, all you need then is Sub 3 of Section 4 rather than Section 6.
Well,
but what this is dealing with,
really,
this is
a
crime against the
custodian.
But
that's still...
John, once a kid is 16, he can consent to himself being taken. When he's under the age of 16, he can't consent to his father taking him.
Right.
But it'd be a defense to second-degree kidnapping, even though the child didn't consent.
Well, now, where do we have anything in here that says age of 16 is the age of consent?
Without consent.
That really bothers me, because you've got people
without
coming at age
consent.
Of all
if he's
different
under
kinds
the age
of
16,
ages.
Even though he wants to go, he can't consent.
But Frank, there's no language, quote, without consent, end quote, in Section 4, Sub 2.
Right. So what the purpose of Section 4 was...
Maybe we should get started. To understand the purpose of Section 4, we've got to go back and look at what the Commission said that it wanted to do before. Now, in preliminary draft number 3 that the Commission considered in March, this kind of a problem that we've tried to get at with subsection 2 of Section 4 now was handled under custodial interference in the second degree. And in this way, we talked about any child not yet 16 from the custody of its parent, guardian, or lawful custodian, or takes or entices any incompetent or committed person from the lawful custody of another person or institution. And then we went on to define committed person. Committed under judicial warrant, any orphan, neglected or delinquent child, mentally defective or insane person, or other dependent or incompetent person entrusted to another's custody, or by or through a recognized social agency, or by authority of law. Now, the Commission felt that coverage was good, but that it wasn't broad enough, that it was too restrictive because it was limited to committed persons. And they didn't feel that, even though we're not talking about a parent-child situation, that there might be instances in which there would be an interference with custody where there had been no commitment as such. And that's the genesis of Subsection 2. And he had deleted any reference, obviously, to a committed person. But that's really what it's aimed at, the kind of situation that does not involve a relative and may not even involve a child-parent relationship being interfered with, but a relationship between a custodian in a state institution or a ward of the court or something like that.
Well, that's right, but it's not clear, Don. I look at the minutes of the Commission, and I said that I thought the intent was as to mental incompetence. And Frank spoke with respect to mental incompetency, and Dave Frost spoke with respect to somebody incapable of understanding or agreeing. But what we have here in Sub 2 is substantially broader than that. And the only point that I make is that if we intend for this to be substantially broader, we should manifest our intent here. And if we only intend what we intended at the time of the Commission, then we need some different language. Now,
I've been bothered by the breadth of this thing. It's very, people are reading into it. Take the boy fishing for a weekend. Welfare or the juvenile caseworker type of things and so forth. I was fine until these specifics began to come up.
Chris, that would come under sub one, another parent, as opposed to sub two.
Not necessarily, yeah.
I'm assuming earlier, I think there was sort of.
Presuming you're over 16.
Say not being relative for sub two, that would cure that particular protection.
Hey, person.
Don, can I bring something up? I realize that you lawyers are talking about one thing, and I'm probably off 100 miles away on something else. I'm concerned that at age 16, the kid can say, well, I've just decided I'm not going to do this, I'm going to do something else. And so he goes off and does his other thing. And yet, we still hold the parents responsible for that kid until he's 18. And yet, we're letting him make a decision in that regard of whether he does or does not do something the parents have him do. And he's responsibly criminally at age 18. But at age 16, we're letting him make consent on whether he does or does not conform to his parents' desires. I just can't handle that one. On remand.
The standpoint of the defendant who's going to be possibly be facing criminal charges for taking this child, that we felt that at 16, that this would be a good cutoff date, or at least as good as any. In fact, we talked about 14. And from the standpoint of a divorce situation, the custody of a child 14, from the civil law, isn't 14 is the age when the wishes of the child are considered for the purposes of custody of that child at age 14. But
for adoption.
Yeah, but I've got a boy 16.
We felt 14 was too young.
All right, I've got a boy 16, and supposing there's a guy who lives down the street who's 25, and he's telling my boy, what we had to do is go off to Mexico and all around Mexico and everything. And my boy's intrigued by this, so he takes off with him. All right, now, I'm his parent, and I'm responsible for him until I'm 18, so I say, the hell with that, we're not going to have that at all. We'll bring this guy back. Bring my kid back and everything. And he turns right around and entices him back again. Now, my kid can make consent to go at age 16, the way it's written now.
No, I don't see where you say it. I don't see where you're talking about consent.
With running away from home.
Yes,
but you couldn't charge the enticer criminal for talking to the kid going with
him. I could?
Couldn't.
There comes a point where perhaps you look to other remedies instead of the criminal remedy.
Well,
you could go into court with a runaway type situation. You have made a ward of the court, for example, and return to the home. Something about nature.
Well, in Don's situation, that guy could be prosecuted for kidnapping in the second degree because. Where in this draft do we say that the age of 16 is the age of consent? We do not say anywhere that. And he took him with intent. It's ambiguous.
With the intent to interfere substantially with another person's liberty and without consent or legal authority, he takes one person from place to another. So we say it has to be without consent. So if the 16-year-old wants to go with him, it can't be.
Well, yeah, he's depriving him of his liberty, obviously.
Well, you know, in connection with that, if we embody the motion that passed in the full commission that set out on page 7, Lent made it. No, I guess he made the motion that it's in its present form, making and without consent or legal authority. It formerly was or.
Well, we don't say the age of 16 is the age of consent, but we do say that if they're under 16, without consent means that the guardian, the parent, has got to consent. So in other words, we're saying the same thing, that once he reaches the age of 16, he can consent to himself being taken away. Under that, his parents have got to consent.
Well, in your situation there, it couldn't be second-degree kidnapping because he wasn't interfering substantially with your kid's personal liberty, despite the fact that he was doing it without consent or legal authority.
Well, no. In his case, he said the child is 16.
The child is 16.
He's 16.
Got a 16-year-old boy, so the boy consents. He wants to go along to Mexico. It's with consent.
Now, I want to know where we say in the kidnapping section here that being 16 or over is the age of consent. Do we say it by implication?
We say it by definition of the term without consent.
We define without consent, you see.
All right.
As being under 16.
Oh, okay.
As being under 16.
All right.
Yeah, but how about, still got to interfere with his liberty.
So it's so.
Yeah, so it really wouldn't be second degree kidnapping unless the.
All right, it wasn't second degree kidnapping. It is second degree custodial interference.
Under the present wording.
16.
Yes, it would be.
Why? Well, then he'd be also 19.
He's not relevant.
Well, the trouble is, there's really a problem here, which I think Jake has got a handle on, is it seems to me we're treating this a little lightly, is most of the ways we're here, we're talking about kidnapping, and now we're talking about enticement. It seems to me there's a different concept involved.
Well, that's what custodial interference is. It's a lesser type of kidnapping.
My feeling is this, the evil in sub 2 here is that it is so general and so vague that it's detached from the purpose that you wish to serve. I do think that perhaps you've gone out ahead of backwards. There are several purposes which have been suggested, and I would suggest that it would be appropriate to decide just what you want to do and then perhaps draw a specific language for those situations. Example, one. You do want to protect the mentally incompetent from maltreatment or being kept away from his institution. Two, you want to forbid the enticement of children. And I think generally there we think about younger children and being enticed by dirty old men and with candy at the car door, that kind of thing. three is the really misdemeanor level minor interference with parental custody. If you want to deal with that at all. But I suggest that the purposes be separated and that language be drafted in more specific terms to deal with each of the evils which you want to deal with.
Okay.
Certainly no question that subsection 2 catches an awful lot of people.
Yeah.
Going back to that second degree, does a child 17 years of age have authority to give consent?
Sure.
Except for Ontario.
Child 16 years old can consent.
Does a 15-year-old one have
no.
consent?
No.
Has it yet?
No. 15-year-old can't consent. They have to get the consent from the parent or guardian.
Where does it say that?
In the definition
of
without
consent.
Oh, definition. I see. That's right. Yeah.
Here's a problem that I need to double back on now is say, all right, under 16 is incapable of getting the consent, so the question is whether the parent gave the consent or not. Mm-hmm. But how about how do you interfere with the child's personal liberty if the child consented?
Well, you mean like say a 15-year-old child
because they can't get consent
to Mexico.
But that isn't this is a different element of the crime. You got one element is without consent, another element is the interference with his personal liberty. How do you interfere with his personal liberty if he consented to it? Even though the child is under age.
Under 16?
Yeah.
You're talking about section 2.
It's a constructive interference.
Yeah, because they can't.
Because the child cannot consent to it, so that's by theoretically.
Well, now wait a minute. All that definition, all the definition that applies to is the words without consent, right?
All right.
But there's two elements to the crime. Without consent is one element, and the other element is the deprivation of personal liberty. Now, we haven't defined the deprivation of personal liberty as defined in the crime.
If you ever saw that, if you struck the end and put or.
Probably wouldn't.
No, I don't think you want to do that.
You may have an intent to interfere substantially with another's liberty, but you may have legal authority to do it. Sure.
Yeah, I think.
Maybe you gotta define the word personal liberty.
Well, I think maybe, I think we're hung up, Chairman, on the broadness of sub two of section four, which I think if it's permitted to go unchecked in its present form, it's going to create some real problems for section two. And I think Jake crystallized the problem. So I would move that we strike section two, or sub two of section four, in its entirety, and direct that section four be returned to the drawing board with instructions to draft language permitting or directing that the case of mental incompetence and committed people be covered here in this section. I don't have the precise language in mind, but I'm looking at the earlier draft, and that we fault, and that we bring that forward, and we restrict this crime of custodial interference to the circumstance in sub one, and those instances relating to incompetence of committed people. Now, I make this motion just to get this out on the table, and it's certainly subject to amendment. I can't speak of situations involving little kids that you mentioned, because I don't know but what that isn't already covered. I don't know. But that's my motion, and to get it going.
Do you all understand the motion? Any discussion? Yeah, Harl.
Well, yeah, I do. But if somebody that's not a relative interferes with a child by taking him, keeping him, or enticing him away, I think that's kidnapping rather than a misdemeanor of a custodial interference in the second degree.
Except for the question of whether or not you can say that, let's put it under the age of 16 to 15-year-old boy, that the 25-year-old came down to be the non-contracted and take off the Mexico without the consent. And so he entices take off of it. This certainly is going to be covered. Probably would be covered.
I think in any event, we would decide on
That isn't presently covered under the law, and I remember something when I was at first day in district court in DA's office, and a similar case was brought up to me, and I asked Vince Iruli, who was the next senior guy to me, what in the hell I should do, and he said, well, if he can't raise his kids, we can't raise them for him. And if you can't control your 16-year-old or 17-year-old kid and keep him from going to Mexico, I think there's a policy question as to whether or not the district attorney should implement the processes of the criminal law to proscribe that, particularly when we're making it a misdemeanor and using an extraditable offense anyway. I think so. That situation isn't presently covered under this enticement statute, as you said. And I don't know whether... Well, the little kid, the little kid that would be covered under second degree kidnapping. Trinity is making cut off 50. Address myself to that, but the little kid would be covered under second-degree kidnapping if it was a non-relative, because intended to interfere substantially with the person's liberty. The person, the kid, is under 16, so it would be constructively without consent. There's no legal authority, and he takes him from one place to another. It is a second-degree kidnapping.
That's true.
All right.
Suppose I go to buy the book of kidnapping. Big house, big swimming pool, and all the clothes and everything else that I have.
Great.
And comes and sends a grand note for grants and everything else. How have I deprived that city of liberty? I agree that he cannot give consent. How have I deprived him of liberty?
Take him away from his mother.
That's
the liberty he's got with it. Taking him away.
Well,
from his
I don't
family.
Know what the definition of the term personal liberty is, because it's a separate element in this offense to what is written in the consent element.
Well,
I think what he's trying to say is that personal liberty should be defined for the purposes of this statute, so that it can say removing the child under 16 from the parental or other control under which he legally is with her, whether he wants to go or not.
It's kind of an area of legal density in theory, but in theory, does a child who is under legally in the custodial care of his parents have any personal liberty?
Well, that's what personal liberty...
Okay, if he does not have, then you're a second element that really exists in the case.
You can't have...
Well,
I think
somebody ought to look into it.
Right. So if they are under that prescribed age, they have no personal liberty. So the question is whether you deprive them of it or not is by depriving the parents, you deprive the child, I'm trying to say.
This one, what I think this statute is trying to do is to avoid the Chessman issue. The Chessman took a girl from one car and moved her over to another car in the parking lot and wrote to her and charged her with kidnapping and rape. And the element that distinguishes this crime is this without substantially interfering with another's personal liberty.
Well, I would say that it's
yeah. I think your five-year-old boy is only just over there.
To detain from the parent guardian.
Would it do violence to what we have in mind if for the purposes of this statute we would say that, to eliminate this question Dave and Lee raised, to say that so far as we're concerned here that personal liberty means removing this person under 16 from the control of his parents or whoever has control of him? Whether he wants to go or not to.
Would you do that by definition or by note?
I think I still got the idea. The words assume control are better words than personal liberty and better words than protracted period or to hold him permanently. The words that are in section 2, sub 2, defense. Why couldn't we just say, rather than interfere substantially with another's personal liberty, it's to assume control of the person without consent or without legal authority?
Why do we have the element of the intent to interfere with
Well, kidnapping is.
Right. And
well,
the main reason was
that standard thinking with kidnapping is that you take a person away without their consent, you deprive them of their liberty.
Well, I'm saying you assume control.
No,
you
take
them
without, their,
consent
without their consent, haven't you deprived them of their personal liberty?
Right. When you're talking about somebody 16 or 17, you have no problem with the interfering with their personal liberty. Because as long as it's without their consent, that you could keep them anywhere. In your situation with the immune child, it can't. But yet you're not really keeping them confined.
You could assume
just
control.
Them with confined.
You could assume control.
They're like discounting them.
Well, the trouble is the child gave consent, and then you get back to the story.
Well, you're talking about constructive deprivation of personal liberties. Either in a note or otherwise, you might spell out that whether a child under 16 wants to go or not, that unless the consent or legal authority has been obtained, removing him does constitute deprivation of personal liberty.
Well, you know, I'm inclined to think, Jay, that since this child enticement statute is of relatively the same level of severity as second-degree kidnapping in our present code, that in that sense it's really duplicitous, and that we approach the problem in a more concise manner if we adopt Tony's suggestion. And I think in a simpler manner, too, if we just say interference with substantial liberty in the case of a child under 16 years old means intent to detain and conceal or remove such person from his parent, guardian, or other person having legal custody. And with that qualifying definition, either in a note or in the definition section, we do away with the need for a separate statute that in other particulars is duplicitous. Now, can you, would you agree with that?
Well, I don't like to qualify something by saying, in the case of X, the language up above is designed or is defined as meaning something other than what it means. It's just an aesthetic.
Well, is your objection to placing it in the statute? If that were in the commentary, would you then see anything wrong with it?
I think commentary would not change express meaning.
Well, then how would you answer this question, Jake, that we've raised as to does it constitute depriving a person of his personal liberties by taking a 14-year-old boy who wants to go?
Best would be ambiguous, very best.
Can I make
a legitimate objection? I just think, though, that if you have a specific problem to deal with, deal with it, and deal with it specifically, and also give it its own body of thought. Example, right now, we've got serious problems in Portland, and I think elsewhere, with runaway kids, and with well-meaning social agencies such as the Council of Churches trying to deal with the problem. I just think some thought would have to be given to the idea of whether their activity today would be within that statute. In other words, I'm just not quite satisfied with the idea of tossing in a qualification to a statute which on its face accomplishes its purpose in order to add to it another purpose. So the individual problem needs. Portland, we've got, we're under the present statutes, we've got Portland police yelling and addressing the council of churches as breaking the law, and the sheriff's office saying, no, it isn't, and the DA refereeing, and we'll have a meeting, juvenile court, welfare, sheriffs, police, DA, council of churches, legal aid, et cetera. Everybody's got a different idea. All I'm saying is, you get a specific spot, as opposed to attempting to deal with it by qualifying definition of a phrase, a statute, which is otherwise for
bringing them on the same lines, I think the definition of without consent, we ought to remove this 16-year provision. Because this crime we're talking about, basically about this concept of deprivation of liberty, and we ought to have a separate crime for enticing. It's not, it's a different ballpark.
I would say that, at least in, under what I think of as kidnapping, of course you've got to think of too, that you've got to be able to cover the first degree. To get first degree, you've got to commit second degree and have the additional purposes of intent. So really what we think of is kidnapping, taking somebody and keeping them. Now your five-year-old child, example, even though take them, you got them in a big place, you're going to pull lots of toys, the kid enjoys being there and everything else. But that would come under what I would think of as being kidnapping, holding them. But you got an entirely different situation where you got a 14-year-old boy running off to Mexico or something like this. That might be enticement, but sure, it shouldn't be included as a kidnapping. That is taking a 5-year-old child, even to your home with a swimming pool and all. That should be kidnapping if you send the note to a friend or ransom or you do it for terrorizing.
Enticement in the first degree.
You know, actually, this statute says it so much more concisely than what we're trying to say. Every person who maliciously, forcibly, or fraudulently takes or entices away any child or minor under the age of 16 with intent to detain and conceal such person from its parent, guardian, or other person having the lawful charge of such child shall be punished, etc. That's pretty concise.
It's a good statute.
Yes, it is.
But then again,
every person who maliciously, forcibly, or fraudulently takes or entices away any child or minor under the age of 16 with intent to detain and conceal such child from its parent, guardian, or other person having the lawful charge of such child shall be punished upon conviction.
I don't like that, detain and conceal.
With intent to detain and conceal.
It's conjunctive. Both elements are necessary. It seems to me that either one, to detain or to conceal.
Yeah, if you take the age limit out, then you're okay for senile marijuana.
Yeah.
That's what we're getting here. That's what we're getting at here.
Very easily take language of that sort, perhaps, and create some sections under custodial interference in the first degree.
You know, I'd
make a motion just to see if we can get something out of it.
You already got a motion.
Yeah.
So that would be that we would amend subsection 1 to section 1, and we'll strike out the reference to 16-3.
Well, now, what section are you talking about?
In the definition of without consent. And then we would prepare an additional section which deals with the problem of enticement as distinguished from the problem of where you have a substantial interference with one's personal liberty.
Well, Frank, I don't think enticement is much different than what we're talking about. That's a method by which you take control, and the sanction should be against the taking of control, whether it's done forcibly or by enticement.
I have no objection to making the penalties comparable. I mean, it was enticement, it was intent to sort of ransom, it should be the same penalty.
But that adds another, kind of George thing, that you have murder, armed robbery, kidnapping is the three major crimes, and then we have to add enticement also as a major crime. That is, if it's enticement for the purpose of ransom or this, that.
Well, if you do that, you're wrecking section two of kidnapping the second degree, which in turn wrecks section one, first degree, because you have to.
Mr. Chairman, we have two motions now. We want to get, I move to send this back to subcommittee.
Could I ask a question before you put that motion? I thought you were going to move and adjourn for lunch. I just said that. Lee, in the case of the, you're concerned about the, whether or not the kid can consent with respect to section two, what interference with substantial liberty is. You take the 5-year-old kid that you took and you put him in the house with all the toys and so on. That taking was without consent because under the definition, that taking was accomplished by deception. So there wouldn't be any problem with it.
Except that he's saying that their personal liberty
is interfered
with because
there's two elements to the crime.
You've got a con in staying there rather than forcing.
Yeah, but if that child wants to leave, you're not going to let it leave. Whether it's 5 years or any other age, if the child starts to leave,
I haven't resolved my own mind. Pardon me, Don, but I haven't resolved my own mind why you need these two elements quite yet. You've got the with intent to interfere substantially with another's personal liberty and without consent. Now, I'm not quite sure in my own mind why you can't remove that first element. Just say the person commits the crime of kidnapping in the second degree if, without consent or legal authority, he takes the person from one place to another.
Or assumes control.
Because it is the consent element that's... isn't liberty and consent the same thing?
No, I don't think they are. And I think that... that what we've been trying to do here is to distinguish kidnapping from incidental conduct that might accompany some other crime. Now, you mentioned the Chessman case, for example, or you have a holdup or a robbery where you take the person from the front office to the back room against his will to open the safe for you. Now, if you take that reference to personal liberty out, then you've got potential of kidnapping charges where kidnapping really isn't the crime.
I back off and I agree with you, and that's why then I say we've got to talk about a separate crime of enticement. Well, trying to get too many things into one.
I'll throw the fourth motion on the floor, then we adjourn.
Well, let's take John, do you wish to withdraw your motion?
I withdraw my motion.
Johnson, do you withdraw your motion?
I withdraw mine.
You withdraw yours. Now, before I entertain yours, why don't we adjourn for lunch now, and meanwhile give Don some time to collect his thoughts.
What time do we come back this week?
We come back next Thursday.
No, and I mean think about this during lunch, and we may save it from going back to the subcommittee.
Can I eat one?
Oh, yes. What time do you want to reconvene?
Donut over there, Don. What is that, Mr. Chairman?
Kidnapping.
I mean the space for the court.
Kidnapping.
Enjoy your lunch, Don. What did you have to eat?
Eating it was all right, but the digesting it may be another problem.
Well, Don's got it all solved.
That's number one.
It's approval, number one.
I can entertain that.
Maybe oversimplifying things here, but it seems to me that
however, it's a good bill, it should pass.
The good it will do will far outweigh the bad.
That's how the chairman carries a bill, you know.
Yeah.
I saw him on the news one night in that famous quote.
Sorry, Don, I didn't mean to interrupt.
But isn't our really where we're hung up is on section four, this custodial interference. Is there yeah. really any basic fundamental disagreement on the kidnapping sections?
No.
The suggestion that we make section four more precise and more definite, of course, takes us back to our earlier drafts where that's what we were trying to do. when we were talking about a child who hadn't reached his 16th birthday or any incompetent or committed person. And then we went on to define what we meant by committed person. But the New York approach to this custodial interference breaks it down into first and second degree as we do, leaving first degree as we have in section five for the most serious situations. The only difference was that in our section five, we have added a provision about the person taken from the state, which does not appear in the New York section. But there's section 135.45, which is custodial interference in the second degree, breaks it down into two subsections. The first one, providing that being a relative of a child less than 16 years old, intending to hold this child permanently or for a protracted period, and knowing that he has no legal right to do so, takes or entices such child from his lawful custodian. Or, subsection 2, knowing that he has no legal right to do so, he takes or entices from lawful custody any incompetent person or other person entrusted by authority of law to the custody of another person or institution.
You know, I think I have the wrong sheets.
Is that New York, though?
Yeah, that's New York.
Well, all I've done is take your section two, or all you've done really is to take their section two and run it past the incompetent.
Well, do they call kidnapping coercion?
I mean, that's the difference between.
Don has run it past it.
Yeah.
I guess so.
They have not defined what they mean by incompetent person.
That's the point.
Or apparently feeling that it wasn't necessary. Now, the their commentary states that custodial interference presented in two degrees is the crime exclusively applicable to the taking or enticing of a child less than 16 years old by a relative from its lawful custodian purely for purposes of assuming custody or control. Subdivision 1 defines a basic or second degree offense and grades it as a Class A misdemeanor. This represents a substantial reduction in punishment for such conduct when it is considered that it constituted kidnapping under the form of penal law and was punishable by a prison term carrying a 10-year maximum. That relatively light kidnapping sentence, moreover, applied only in the case of a parent defendant. An aunt or a grandparent, for example, was subject to the regular kidnapping sentence of 20 years to life, or if the child died, to the death penalty. The revised penal law's custodial interference section, on the other hand, in addition to its drastic penalty reduction, accords the benefits of the new scheme not merely to a parent, but to any relative defined as a parent, ancestor, brother, sister, uncle, or aunt. Subdivision 2 defines a related offense very similar to, if somewhat broader than, a former penal law offense, penalizing as a misdemeanor the enticing or liberation of incompetents, juvenile delinquents, and the like from institutions in which they are confined. Of course, they had a former statute that they were drawing on and that they were just modifying, whereas we don't have such a statute at the present time other than our child-stealing statute. But I was wondering about the language, if you feel that, that kind of language is specific enough, or in view of some of the comments that were made, particularly Jake Tanger's, about being specific about this, whether that is still too broad, or what do you think, Jake? Do you think that would meet the objection, or do you think it's still...
I can't say, because I was unable to follow it well enough. Care to read the language?
Yeah, restate the language.
All right, there's subsection 2. Now, this is second degree custodial interference. Of course, the pertinent language is any incompetent person or other person, but provides knowing that he has no legal right to do so, he takes or entices from lawful custody any incompetent person or other person entrusted by authority of law to the custody of another person or institution.
Is that the language you wrote?
Is that the child
that you wrote?
Incompetent person?
No, he's reading from the, but you wrote, you had some proposed.
Yeah,
language.
Or no, other person entrusted by authority of law. That would.
Child or a person judged incompetent.
Either one not capable of making a decision.
Let me write the specific language down again. Knowing or having reason to know that he has no legal right to do so, he takes, entices, or keeps, and then you insert something. What?
Well, they just have takes or entices. We had keeps in our draft.
All right.
from lawful custody, any incompetent person. Or other person entrusted by authority of law to the custody of another person or institution.
That takes care of child. By authority of law, entrusted to another person or institution.
That's exactly what we have now.
That includes prisoners.
We say entices or keeps a person to his lawful custodian, which is very much the same, if not exactly the same. In fact, if it includes a child and incompetent.
As a matter of fact, I think ours is better because we define lawful custodian in our definition.
Right. Here we have changed.
So a person who doesn't have a lawful custodian just wouldn't apply.
That would be an emancipated person, right?
Yeah. But this would only apply to people who have lawful custodians, which would be what, children or people judged to be incompetent or prisoners or
parents, guardian, or other person responsible by authority of law for the care of custody or control of everybody that has.
Yeah.
Custody. Well, what about the sixteen-year-old kid has a lawful custodian?
That arises, I think, from our definitions of 16 and consent on the without consent part of section 1.
Well, yet we almost forgot that too, that a person could be charged under section 4.2, a relative where he could not be charged would have a good defense. Second degree kidnapping. It would be a good defense to second degree kidnapping, but it would, in effect, pleading guilty this section 4 sub 2.
Why? I was gone for a while. Why was it felt that sub 2 was too broad?
Well, we thought of a 19 year old man, a 19 year old girl.
Well, I was the one that...
Well, in other words, section 4, sub 2 would include aiding and abetting a runaway situation. I think this is what...
Well, what's wrong with that?
Well, I don't know.
Well, Lee's objection was that he gave, as I understood it, was it gave too much, let too many people chase in and call the force of the criminal law down when they really shouldn't be entitled to use it.
Well, his example was the father that wants to take his son for a weekend fishing trip.
When the kid is under custody, the kid's been granted to the mother. Mm-hmm. The mother doesn't agree with it. Father picks him up at 5 o'clock in the afternoon from school, comes back Monday morning and finds himself in a pokey for knowing that he had no legal right to do so and entice the kid away from his legal custodian.
Well, and for that matter, like at least under Section 1 here, we have the condition that it has to be permanently or for a protracted period. But under this Section 2, we don't, where, say, even a father come by and take him away from home for 15, 20 minutes right around the block, the mother could come in and charge under Section 2.
Well, I have a question. Could you charge someone under Sub 2 who was a relative?
You can presently, mm-hmm. but
the way it's drawn.
Well, what if you were to say not being a relative and then all this?
Why, we have a subsection 3 and saying, which would read as follows, subsection 2 of this section does not apply to relatives, period. I think that I've completely missed the point that you made, and I think so succinctly, I all morning wasn't reading sub 2 in light of the words lawful custodian and their definition that appear in the, so I can see, I would withdraw the objections that I was making today earlier, and think if we don't want to apply this to relatives, we can remedy that very simply.
Well, instead of putting another subsection, could you just add to the sub 2?
Well, I can see where eliminating relatives could cause problems. So the legal custodian, suppose the legal custodian is the state hospital out here, and it's got Rudos in it, and his wife comes up and takes him out. There is legal custodian. She's a relative, so she'd be eliminated.
That might also negate a criminal charge of attempting to aid in an escape, wouldn't it?
What harm would you do by leaving 16th birthday out of there?
Don's hung up on that 16th birthday. All the other states seem to have it for some reason.
I just don't like his never-never land all the time.
Well, how about a 20-year-old?
16 to 18 is a never-never land.
Well,
what do you mean?
The thing of it is that we're saying that under the age of 16, a child cannot consent to himself being taken care of.
Over, he can.
But when he's 16 years old, if his father comes and takes him away, he at least is able to consent to
knowing or having
taken away, not being kidnapped.
This isn't going to remove the Never Never Land either.
It might be a custodial interference.
Either way,
be a kidnapped.
Why not just say, if
you can take care of
the son, knowing or having
some of the states, Illinois, for example, would go farther down as far as the ages concerned. This does. Illinois is 13.
And then returns them.
They cut it off.
You don't have a cutout here in this situation. I could have to prove each time the capacity for consent. What are you talking about? Someone who is
I think you got a hell of a good idea. I wish I had thought of it.
If you can consent to being taken, then there's no crime. So what we're doing is putting an artificial level, as we do in some of the other areas. Saying anyone under this age cannot consent.
That's right, that's what we're saying.
Senator Burns has an idea here that may solve this. John, why don't you
just strike the first clause in sub 1 and the down to the comma and strike the word and say, a person commits a crime of custodial interference in the second degree if knowing or having reason to know that he has no legal right to do so. He takes, entices, or keeps a person from his lawful custodian with intent to hold him permanently or for a protracted period. Period. Now, this would do away with the arbitrary 16-year-old situation that we are hung up on. The father who takes his kid out of school to go fishing and returns him voluntarily the next day or that afternoon or after a weekend, those kind of cases shouldn't belong in the criminal courts anyway. The DA probably wouldn't issue on him, but if he did issue, there would be an issue there for the defense to raise with respect to whether or not this taking was for a protracted period.
Well, John, haven't you entirely wiped out then any criminal sanction for the father who does?
Well,
take the child away from the mother who's been in custody.
Permanently
or for a protracted period.
We leave the sanction there only if the taking was for a protracted period. And it's a question in my mind. I've got a divorce case right now where the mother just absolutely won't let the father have the kids except when he's entitled to, one afternoon a week. Father wants to take the kids to the ball game. My question in my mind, and I know that if he did pick his 12-year-old boy up at school and take him to the Beavers game and return him at 10 o'clock that night, that she'd file criminal charges against
him. There are civil remedies for that.
That's right.
You bet. There's a contempt of court.
And there's no immediacy about it either.
No.
That there would be on some other way.
But if you picked him up and kept him for a weekend, maybe that might be a protracted period or for a week. But I'm not so sure that this client of mine should have the right to go to the DA and charge him with a criminal offense for keeping the kid away.
But wouldn't it be just as well, looking at it from the other standpoint, would it be just as well to have the father go into court and get permission to get to the ball game? I mean, the court is certainly going to order it.
Be certainly much better.
Rather than... This is the problem that you get into in all these self-help situations, that you can get into a lot more trouble.
You're going to have no matter what we do with this law anyway.
But there is a contempt remedy.
What Frank is saying, though, is that we're saying that because a person doesn't believe the law should apply to him, he has a right not to do it. And the law of the court, the order granting the right to visitation, is his law at that point. Mm-hmm. So you're saying because he doesn't like it, he has a right to violate it so long as it's not for a protected period.
Well, he's liable to contempt of court, and I'd and she can sure file a motion to show cause why he shouldn't be held in contempt, and Judge Lewis can put him in jail for 30 days for contempt for doing that.
And there is remedy left.
But we're talking more in the nature of a civil remedy, think properly so, than a criminal remedy. Now, if the detention or enticement is for a protracted period, then I think the criminal law should intervene. But I think we're dancing on the head of a pin, and
we also take care of the council of churches problem.
Yes, it would.
Sure would.
You know, although it seems funny to me that we Don, for example, raises a 16-year-old. The 16-year deal here. Here, the 18-year-old advocates for a right to vote. If they took that same position, they'd say at 18 years and 1 month, this guy's mature enough to vote, but at 17 months and years and 11 months, he isn't capable of giving his consent whether to go to Mexico with somebody. So that's why the whole thing sounds foolish.
It is arbitrary. There's no question about it. And the only thing I bring up is that as long as it's going to be arbitrary, I'd like to see him arbitrary at one area so that everybody knows when that happens.
Well, they know it's 16, if it's spelled out. They know it's arbitrary, and they know the age.
Well,
but when you move it and moving it up any further, you're about depriving him of right to give consent when the next day they'd be eligible to vote on the very question, maybe.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, I really see nothing wrong with Section 4 except the words I pointed out protractedly. The whole impermanent period. I really think it's a great place for a cop-out, and I think we need some safety valves in this law. And I don't see that the DA is going to have a great problem.
Well, if we leave it the way it is, we get hung up on this 16th birthday situation.
So, where are you hung up? Not to...
Where did you change the 16th?
Cut it out.
He just cut it out. He started the thing by saying knowing or having reason, ending it at, and putting a period after protected period and eliminating sub two. Is that correct?
Right.
Well, the 16-year-old limitation wasn't in this one anyway.
With respect to the relative.
So he's removing the relative and the 16th birthday. Really, that's all. Because the other...
And it's all a misdemeanor, isn't it?
It's all in the misdemeanor.
Mr. Chairman, I would so move.
May I ask one question? Is the phrase, or having reason to know, being voted on now?
Yes, if you vote on this motion.
Should that be left out? Because I think you're inserting the culpability problem that ought not to be built into the code. Knowing means one thing. Having reason to know definitely suggests to me that this crime can be committed negligently, and I don't think we want to get into that situation where crimes can be committed through negligence, because it might be an unreasonable mistake with respect to the age 16 that would then...
16 is out.
Well, oh, I'm sorry.
No 16 in here.
That's not in there. Well, how about that? Would that make any difference in...
with respect to... Well, then it would just be with respect to the legal right.
We haven't been using that phrase, knowing or have reason to know.
The only place where we've used it, and in effect we have retained it from our existing code, is with respect to theft by receiving stolen property.
I don't think it's a good practice. Do you agree at all that we may be injecting negligence into this kind of a crime?
Well, there comes a point where that's not a bad idea.
Yeah.
I think before somebody takes somebody away, he has a certain duty to look into his...
Shouldn't we use the word recklessly then?
The other thing is, you get into problems of proof of knowledge, which are frequently impossible. You think about stolen property, for example. You're seldom able to prove.
I don't object to whatever policy you adopt, but I think we'd have better words for it. You want to really insert the concept of recklessness in that part.
We're not talking about recklessness. We're talking about...
I don't want to complicate.
At least in our earlier discussion this morning, why that was.
You think that motion?
We're talking about a situation.
I've heard it this other way.
Oh, the way it is there.
I personally do.
He doesn't have reason to know at that point. We're talking about a situation where a very elderly person is actually her guardian, but she's not herself, the guardian of the person. He comes and takes her for a drive. The son drives her to Omaha to visit her relatives. He doesn't have reason to know at that point that there is a guardian for her. There's no substantial reason for him to believe that she's subject to a guardian. She's by herself.
Don, did he handle the problem where on Section 3 it says a person commits a crime of kidnapping in the first degree if he violates Section 2 of the article? When we go back to Section 2, and there's an affirmative defense if the person is a relative, the person, but what if he is also a relative but does one of these things?
Well, then his sole purpose is to take custody.
I remember taking him out of that situation.
I have all those three elements.
Good, I remember.
The way that this would read now, under the motion, a person commits the crime of custodial interference in the second degree if, knowing or having reason to know that he has no legal right to do so, he takes, entices, or keeps the person from...
No, it should be a person.
A person instead of that.
Keeps a person from his lawful custodian with intent to hold him permanently or for a protracted period. That's all it would be to...
And strike sub 2.
And delete sub 2.
And we only have one degree then of custodial interference.
Right? Yes.
No.
They will have custodial.
Just have one
offense.
There won't be any subsection.
One offense under second degree custodial interference.
Question. All right. Is there any further discussion? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
Motion is carried. Section 5.
All right. As I noted in the commentary, it's basically the same as we had in the draft. Commission had before in March, appeared as Section 6 in preliminary draft number 3, and except that it now requires a substantial risk of illness or physical injury instead of a risk, the language we had before was a risk that the person's safety will be endangered or that his health will be materially impaired.
That would be
I think this is clear language now. But it recognizes there's some risk in almost any situation, so it requires a substantial risk. And an example I give is that, for example, there's an infant involved that requires special medication and is deprived of this medication because of the actions of the defendant. Of course, this Section 5 could involve a relative or it might not involve a relative.
Yeah.
It would apply to all of them, any class of defendant.
This would not be a misdemeanor?
No, this would be a felony, is what we anticipate.
But it
would be a lesser degree of felony than kidnapping.
I move we approve it.
Have we made any changes in Section 5 by what we did in Section 4? I don't see any changes.
No, I don't see any. In fact, I think it ties in.
I don't think we made any changes, but I thought I'd better ask because I don't have it written down.
It comes closer to taking care of the situation that Chandler mentioned of a wife taking her husband from an institution. She could be exposing him to illness or physical injury.
So Brutus will end up there.
Yeah. All right, a motion's been made to adopt Section 5. All those in favor will say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Now, how about the kidnapping as a whole?
Well, we have one other, we've actually got two other sections that the subcommittee has referred to the commission since the commission considered kidnapping, and that is Section 6.
Oh, coercion.
Coercion.
Yeah.
And Section 7.
Could I interrupt and make a suggestion? Particularly helpful, I think, to non-committee members of the whole commission. But could you, henceforth, in typing up the minutes, on the first page of the minutes, index, or not even necessarily index, but just list the subjects that were covered in the course of those minutes. I was trying to find the minutes for sub 2 where you discuss coercion, and I've got to thumb through every page and look for how you underline it. If you just put, right after members present, if you just list the things that you consider in the whole thing, it would maybe you have a...
Well, I have a recap sheet. Each of your notebooks has a recap sheet that lists each of the drafts that have been considered and is up to date with respect to what happened to that draft, what the date of the subcommittee minutes were.
Yeah. It still would help, though. We wouldn't have to refer to that. It wouldn't be any great job, Don, to do that.
Well, I'm glad to do it, but I think the recap sheet would be of more value than what you're suggesting, because putting it on the front page of the minutes won't direct you to the minutes. I mean, you still won't know which minutes to go to unless...
That's right, you won't.
And that's the reason I prepared the recap sheet, so that you would have a guide to the history of each draft. Now, for example, on kidnapping and related offenses, the recap sheet shows the dates of the meetings and what subcommittee considered it and the actions of the subcommittee. And... I don't know if this gives you all the information that you're looking for, but this would refer you to the right minutes. And that's in your black notebook.
Yeah. Okay. Well,
I meant to mention that at the beginning of the
meeting.
You
mentioned that at our subcommittee meeting Thursday, and I'd forgotten it because it...
Did we just recently get a copy of the recap sheet?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, I sent copies to all of you, but we also put them in your commission notebooks and also in your subcommittee notebooks.
Yeah.
Well, then, are you saying, Don, that on February 20th, sub 2 recommended that coercion be sent to the full commission without recommendation?
Yeah, it did. And the reason was this. Now, originally, our draft on assault and related offenses had a section in it on coercion. The subcommittee decided to delete. Now, this is subcommittee number 2 I'm talking about. Subcommittee number 2 decided to delete the sections on coercion from the assault draft. So when the assault draft came to the full commission, there were no provisions relating to coercion. The subcommittee, subsequent to that, felt that that we shouldn't just bury coercion in subcommittee without the commission having an opportunity to consider it. Now, for the purposes of placement in the code, we felt it could go just as easily with kidnapping-related offenses as it did with assault. Some of the other states place it with kidnapping, some place it with assault. But at first, we felt, well, we had this kind of conduct covered. May not necessarily be the case, though, because we have in our theft draft, for example, we have a section on theft by extortion, which partly supplants our present extortion law. But theft by extortion requires obtaining property as a result of this conduct. And if you attempt to obtain property, of course, then you would be covered as under attempted theft by extortion. But supposing that you compel another to engage in conduct that he has a right not to engage in, but you don't have any motive to obtain property thereby. Actually, this coercion section is more akin to our present extortion statute than our new extortion section. For example, a legislator is threatened with physical injury to himself or to a member of his family if he doesn't vote a certain way with respect to a bill. It's before the House of Representatives, for example.
Could I read for the commission, Chairman, the discussion
yes.
subcommittee
yeah,
on coercion? Because you all don't have this.
Yeah, please do, John.
Mr. Paulette admitted that he was not overly enthusiastic about having this section in the draft.
Can't you start some other point?
But he felt that the decision as to including the section or deleting it from the assault draft should be a subcommittee decision. Mr. Paulette thought the crime was pretty well covered in the instances where it would be most likely to occur, and that is where there is some property element involved, an attempt to get property as a result of this action. The language in Section 6, he said, is almost identical to the language contained in the theft by extortion draft. Mr. Thornton thought it should be carefully studied because he felt coercion was something a little different from extortion. Extortion, he said, will not reach certain types of racketeering and shakedown conduct, and he was not sure whether the theft statute would or not. Don referred to the present statute, 163.480, which says, quote, any person who threatens any injury to the person or property of another or threatens to accuse another of any crime with intent thereby to extort any pecuniary advantage or property from him or with intent to compel him to do any act against his will shall be punished, etc. He noted that the crime is committed when the threat is made and there is no requirement the property be obtained. The threat is made and no requirement the property be obtained. The proposed draft follows the present law but separates the offenses of theft by extortion and coercion. Theft by extortion where you obtain some property. If property was involved, he said, it would fall under theft, and if no property was obtained as a result of the theft, it could be attempt. Mr. Thornton recalled coming up against situations and finding that the extortion statute was insufficient and where he wanted to offer a bill like this. He had some notes regarding this, and he said he wanted to check out. Chairman Carson referred to the language in Section 6, sub 8, to the effect that coercion is demanding conduct or telling someone to refrain from conduct, to use or abuse his position as a public servant by performing some act within or related to his official duties, and he wondered about its application, say, to committee chairman in conducting a hearing or a meeting. And he noted that the wording was in the proposed Illinois draft, in this draft and also in Illinois. And Don said that it came from the Model Penal Code as well as from New York. And the chairman was of the opinion that the draft was such a hybrid that it lost the safeguards in both instances. And he noted that the Model Penal Code defined criminal coercion, quote, with purpose unlawfully to restrict another, and then put in the subsection relating to taking or withholding action as a public official. Senator Lent pointed out that Illinois starts out the first part of its section by saying, quote, a threat to perform without lawful authority any of the following acts, end quote, and that this preface didn't appear in your draft. And Don agreed that this was closer to New York, or closer to that of New York. It goes on for a page here, on page 27 of the minutes of February 20th, and I recommended that that we bounce it over to the full commission and let us make a decision on it, because it was so hybrid. I don't know whether that helped you. Probably didn't. It helped me put it in perspective.
The subcommittee also discussed it again on April 24th. A meeting at that time, it was felt that we may be leaving a hole if we don't provide a separate section on coercion.
If you don't obtain it and complete the act, wouldn't it be attempt at theft by extortion?
Let's say it's not property that you want to get. You want them to do something like
vote. If you don't have anything,
want you to vote in such a way, so make the threat.
I recognize some of the wording. Having argued about it, subcommittee on theft by extortion.
Well,
but if there's a, we're perhaps there is or should be different things, whether you're stealing goods or services or something else, one thing, and whether you're, and when you're trying or attempting to get somebody to do something that he shouldn't be required to do if he doesn't want to do it, or he shouldn't do if it's illegal for him to do it, it's different.
You see, our present statute is a two-pronged thing. It requires the coercion with an intent to obtain property or a pecuniary benefit, or I don't remember the exact language, or to compel the person to do something against his will. And part of that we picked up under theft by extortion, but half of it, the other means of committing this crime, wasn't covered.
You changed your opinion.
I have changed my mind, and this was the discussion that we had on April 24. I told the subcommittee I changed my mind. I felt that we might not have everything taken care of without a separate section, but I felt that the commission should have a chance to consider it anyway.
Some of that labor might be.
The Model Penal Code has a section on criminal coercion, section 212.5. New York has coercion in the second degree and in the first degree. Illinois has a crime called intimidation. And I understand that this section is, or this statute, the Illinois statute, is before the Supreme Court right now. Have you heard anything on that, George?
The Illinois Court or the U.S.?
No, the U.S. Supreme Court. Their section on intimidation, which will be interesting to see how it makes out. But but all of these other codes are framed in terms of either an intent to force somebody to do something against his will, or just the act of compelling or inducing a person to perform against his will. The subsections 1 through 9 of section 6 are the same as the acts that are prohibited under theft by extortion. The only difference is up in the lead paragraph, where there's no element of obtaining property involved.
I was originally of the opinion that it was dangerous to employ the same language that you use in theft by extortion in the particulars, but I'm not so sure now. And you use the same defense that the Model Penal Code does in your language over on page 10, don't you?
Yeah,
roughly.
We've used it. We've provided that same defense under our theft draft also.
I think it's okay. But I thought originally, Don, that if we're going to do it, that we probably should go just use the Model Penal Code language. It seemed simpler and cleaner. But then we'll run into ambiguity because between this and extortion, and I think for uniformity's sake, maybe what you've done is proper, so I don't have an objection to it. Whatever you do is fine with me.
No. The do burn.
I don't see anything too far wrong with that one.
I move to approve section 6.
You've heard the motion. Any discussion? Further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Carried. Well, this section 7 carries through to theft too, doesn't it, Don? I mean, a similar one. Yeah.
Yes, it's the same, really the same defense.
Yeah.
I move we approve section 7.
You heard the motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Carried.
Excuse me, did Representative Russell...
How'd you vote, Dave? Maybe we'd better call the roll.
Well, just a second. The sole purpose was to compel or induce the victim to make take reasonable action to make good the wrong, which was the subject. Oh.
The reason I approved so quickly is because we argued this out on theft, and all we've done really is to change. We've got the same defense that we had in theft, except we put coercion in place of theft.
It looks like condemnation of a criminal offense.
Yeah.
What it looks like.
That isn't.
It's not what it is.
Oh, no. You mean the word good the wrong does.
It's yeah. Kept the...
Wrong is a peculiar word, but...
I kill my neighbor, but the neighbor who saw me across the fence do it says if you'll come over and
bring him back to
our
life.
Children and do good, that I'll forgive your wrong and won't tell a DA about it.
Well, I'm supposed to forgive the inadvertent libel.
Well, I see. Well, that's got some beautiful examples that come to mind, none of which would be.
Well, an example we set out in the page 12.
New York uses that.
With respect to this defense, gives an example of a defendant accused of coercion for having compelled a youth under threat of charging him with criminal mischief paint defendant's fence, which the youth had marked up in an act of vandalism. He's forced the individual to do something he doesn't want to do. It's against his will. He would have a right to abstain from doing it.
And the model penal code uses making good a wrong done, so I imagine they...
And it protects the attorneys in the making of demand letters.
Yeah.
Now that we've got down to some practical
guys. Now is that it's all about the... How about the scurrilous editorial that appears occasionally?
Well, that's protected already under another. Call it the First Amendment.
We need Burns' vote.
How is this protected, Frank? Where do you see that?
Well, an attorney in making a demand applied.
Yeah, where does that take care of?
Well, it would be taken care of in this defense.
Section 7 would take care of it, where Section 6 might constitute a crime if the charge was not true. George Platt sees something wrong with my motion.
George?
Is the motion for the whole section now?
Section 7.
Would be appropriate in my remarks. Again, I'm going to raise the issue that arose earlier, on the use of the word reasonable. I would submit, and certainly it's arguable, that we have committed a crime of negligence with respect to knowing or having reason to know, which I think is contrary to our basic policy on culpability. Now, this section certainly, again, raises the same issue when we say that the defendant reasonably believed such and such to be the fact. In other words, he has no defense to this crime if he didn't have good reason, if he should have known but did not actually know. Now, I think this is not arguing over one word. We're arguing over a basic principle here, which also will come up later with respect to the agenda item on culpability. It's my contention, and I think the clearly stated intention of the Model Penal Code, not to impose criminal liability except in the rarest instance based on negligence. And in effect, if we create a defense which is of no use to a defendant if in fact he can negligently make a mistake, in other words, should have known but did not in fact know, then we are inserting a crime of negligence where we have previously been speaking in terms of intention and knowledge.
It's a defense, George. Big part is a defense, though.
Well, I know it's a defense, but let's transfer it to a more serious situation.